From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yeah, we're going to talk about coffee and how good it is for you. I'm always up for talking about coffee. You got it. And walnuts, by the way. Walnuts are also good for you. I'm going to fill you in on ways to live that long, sweet life by coffee and walnuts. And maybe there's a paradigm shift in the treatment of diabetes. We should look at weight loss more than blood sugar. This is interesting stuff that was published in the journal Lancet.
I can't wait for coffee is good for you. Okay, and what's our special recipe?
Oh, you're going to love this. It's a great recipe, Tom. Sesame tofu with broccoli. I know how much you love tofu. Every night when you go home, you say, Monica, Mickey, what's for dinner? And if she goes tofu, you go, yes, tofu. That's right. But it really is a good recipe.
Okay. 800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Let's welcome our first caller now, Zorba, a listener with us in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a somewhat active, healthy, 62-year-old African-American female, about 5'10 and a half. I'm not on any medication. Now, I've never had a problem with my weight, and to be honest, it's still not really a problem, mm-hmm. but post-menopause, I have gained weight almost exclusively in my middle, mm-hmm. and it really is stubborn belly fat. Mm-hmm. It's been a slow progression over the past years, and now I realize that I must do something as my belly has become the center of attention. But some things I've started implementing in my diet is I've cut back on my sugar intake mm-hmm. about
Good.
95%. Mm-hmm. I've started eating more of my garden, mm-hmm. and I've cut back on transitional mm-hmm. foods. I'm a vegan, so I've tried to cut back on that because it contains mm-hmm. they contain a lot of salt. And sometimes I found that it can be, fattier than I realized.
Sure.
And I just want to get some tips from you as what else I can do to get rid of my belly.
Well, it's such a problem. One of the things I was reading recently, some articles about metabolism. Our greatest metabolism actually occurs in the first 6 months of life. We need 50% more calories per unit of space, height and weight. Infants use 50% more than adults do. I mean, it's an amazing growth period. And then what happens is we continue, with that huge growth period with that. We have another growth period when it comes to puberty. And then it kind of levels off around the age of 21, 25, maybe up to the age of 30. And after that, our metabolism needs decreases. So by the time we're actually in our 50s, we need about 20 to 25%, believe it or not, less calories than we needed when we were in our 20s, because we just don't need that when we're at rest. And so the problem is if we eat the same at 30 as we do at 50, we gain weight. Now, that's at one end. The other end is we lose about 1% of our muscle mass every single year, no matter what we do. We just lose muscle mass, and it gets replaced by weight. So we'll say young men who have six-pack abs, even if they're the same weight in their 50s, they don't have six-pack abs. They have love handles. And so belly fat becomes de rigueur. It is the problem as we're looking at it. So you've gotten control of your calories. You said you're 5'10". What's your weight?
I'm right now about 185.
So about 180, 185. So, one way to get rid of your belly fat is to really, once again, we hate to look at calories, but you've just got to look at that stuff and see what you're eating. You want to look at the low-hanging fruit. It may be you're eating really good food, but too much of it. Or it may be you're snacking at something that's the wrong thing. The other day, probably a week or 2 weeks ago, I was looking at Oreos. My son has a boat. We were out on the boat. I decided, hey, it's one of the last boat seasons in Madison. Madison, Wisconsin, I'm going to treat ourselves and get Oreos. And I read, you know, two Oreos, and I realized, gosh, two Oreos are like 110 calories, I think it was. I can't remember exactly what it was. So I was snarfing in Snickers, and they were Oreos, and didn't even realize that. So look at your low-hanging fruit. Start to look at calories, Google them, and begin to cut back, because really it's a weight issue. And the issue is belly fat is where it's sitting. It can sit on your belly, and as a woman, it's common also sit in your buttocks. But I think calories are your way to go, and that's where you've got to start to look at. What do you drink, any milk at all, or soy milk?
I drink almond milk and some oat milk.
Okay.
But I don't drink that often, though.
Okay, because that's really important. A lot of people get a lot of calories from dairy products or soy products or almond products they're doing. So I think the first tip is, number one, Google calories. Look at what you're doing. I like people to take a diary. Write down everything you're eating for a day or two or 3 days. Just write it down. Don't look anything up. Then go back to Google, look it up, and see where those calories are, and then begin to make your changes. It's so tough in our society to lose weight. I mean, it's every day in my office, people ask me how to lose weight, and I said, it's just really tough. You got to look at that, where those calories are coming from.
Great. Thank you for that information. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And good luck with being a vegan. It's sometimes difficult. You got to look at those calories. I mean, a lot of vegan food may be vegan, but they're not necessarily high in protein, which is what we need, and low in calories. So thanks for your call.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before we get back to the phones, coffee is good for me?
Oh, my goodness. You know, shocking, isn't it? Shocking. That's right. Now, do you drink much coffee? You don't drink much coffee, or do you?
One cup a day.
How big is the cup?
You know, that's a cup. It's like a mug.
Like a mug. You don't drink two or three. One cup in the morning?
Just one.
How can you limit yourself to just one cup a day?
I have a hard time getting that one down. It doesn't taste that good.
See, it doesn't taste that good. Well, you may not have good coffee. Maybe that's what it is. I love coffee. Well, you know I love coffee. Love coffee. I mean, I have drip coffee in the morning, and then middle of the day, I might have a K-cup coffee, you know, freshly brewed through these little K-cups kind of thing. And then I'll have some espresso mid. In fact, I have to limit myself because I love coffee. Well, once again, science marches on and has shown that up to 3 cups of coffee a day, get this, produces a lower risk of stroke and fatal heart attacks. In other words, drink coffee and stay well. This is a huge study. Huge study out of Budapest, Hungary. All-cause mortality, looking at it over a 15-year period. This came from the UK Biobank. So United Kingdom, they keep track of people, what they're doing, because they have one insurance company. It's called the government. And they kept track of 468,000 participants in this biobank. Average age was 56 years when they started. Roughly half of them were women. And on a regular basis, they asked them whether they drink coffee. So 22% didn't drink any coffee at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, they were not my friends. You know, the ones who drink coffee.
Okay,
light to moderate, a half cup of coffee to 3 cups a day. Okay, so you would fit
within
that. That's
me, yeah. Right.
And that's roughly half, a little over 60% of those. And then about 20% were more than 3 cups a day. Hey, man.
That's you, yeah.
What they discovered was if you drank coffee and you consumed up to 3 drinks a day, you had a lower incidence of heart attack and stroke. 12%, get this, 12% reduction in overall death from just drinking coffee, and a 70% reduction in stroke and heart attacks. Now, come on. I mean, really. I mean, this is good science.
I'm supposed to believe that?
You're supposed to believe it. Now, let's connect that with another study that showed that that eating walnuts also lowered the bad cholesterol, the LDL cholesterol, and may actually produce a reduction in heart attack strokes. And this was another study, looked at LDL, the bad cholesterol, and found that people ate a handful of walnuts. Do you like walnuts?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Does not sound like you really like walnuts. It sounds like you just sort of believe that walnuts might be okay.
Who goes out and has walnuts?
That's I don't believe me, I don't have walnuts. I have almonds. I'll get a handful of almonds. Almonds I like. But anyway, this was probably funded by the Walnut Association of America, although it doesn't say that. But getting back to it, handful of walnuts also appeared to be healthy for you. So you know what the bottom line is?
Okay, tell me.
That's right. Drink three. You got to have 2 cups of coffee, Tom. You know, you're an old guy, as I am. You know, go from your 1 cup to 2 cups of coffee and give yourself a handful of walnuts, and you might live to 103.
Because I had walnuts and drank
and coffee. That's right, in the morning. What do you have for breakfast in the morning? You have a cup of coffee. What else?
Cereal. Juice.
What kind of cereal?
I don't know, different kinds.
Different kinds, whatever you have. Yeah. And what kind of juice?
Orange.
Orange juice, so see. So you, but you have a good breakfast.
And coffee.
And coffee. See, you have a good breakfast. Anyway, folks, coffee, walnuts, and you will live a long, sweet life.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's go to a voicemail in Jacksonville, Florida.
Hello, Zorba Pastor. Please tell me how to clean a cast iron skillet that has a lot of old grease that is stuck to it. I listen to your show so often. It is so interesting. Yes, it is. Thank you so much.
I love cast iron.
How nice is that?
I love cast iron, and I love the compliment. Thank you very, very much. Well, I have to tell you, I have a cast iron skillet, and when I die, and when Penny and I die, the real issue between our daughters, Vanessa and Dee Dee, is who gets the cast iron skillet. I mean, we've actually discussed that. They're going to have to flip a coin to see who actually gets the cast iron skillet. But sometimes there's simply too much in that cast iron, and you've got to get rid of it, and you've got to re-season it. When you season a new cast iron pot, you actually put oil on it, and you keep on putting oil on it. It gradually builds up a layer, but if there's too much, you have to get rid of it. And I'll tell you exactly what I use. I use Easy Off, EASY-OFF. Why do I use Easy Off? Because I've been using it for about 50 years. Mm-hmm. And what you do is you spray it on the cast iron skillet. You let it sit there for about 5 minutes. You take a steel, you know, like a Brillo, but it's not Brillo that I use. I use steel brush. And you do that to get rid of it. And you've got to do it over and over and over again until you get to the cast iron. And recently I did this. The cast iron skillet that we have is really well done, but the top had not been, I mean, I sort of had let it go, and there was grease on the top. And it took me about 20 times. I sprayed it literally 20 times, rubbed it off, let it sit there for 5 minutes, came back, rubbed it off, sprayed it, let it sit there for 5 minutes, and eventually you will get to the bottom of it. And there is an advantage to cooking in cast iron skillet in that it adds iron to your diet. Hmm. And that can be very useful for preventing iron deficiency anemia. So cooking with cast iron skillets is actually a great way to help add a little bit of iron to your diet.
We sure learn a lot during this show. We do. Now
thank you, Tom.
Before the break now, Zorba, but let's fire up another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Okay, Zorba, this email came to us from Darla, who listens to the show on WUTK in Knoxville, Tennessee. Darla writes, "Dear Zorba, I listen to you regularly and have always enjoyed your medical and nutrition advice, which I find is always responsible and accurate. I was highly disappointed in your comment that dietitians and nutritionists may recommend a cardiac diet that is too low in healthy fats. Mm-hmm. I've been a dietitian for over 40 years, and I've never encountered someone in my field that is not up to date with the latest recommendations. In fact, dietitians need 75 hours of approved continuing education every 5 years. Our profession was the first allied health profession to require continuing education, so we keep up to date. I recommend the Mediterranean diet, like most of my peers, without hesitation, and do recommend healthy fats. There are those in our profession who do not stay up to date, I imagine, but the same can be said about physicians and any other medical profession. I will continue.
She got me there.
I will continue to listen, and I do think you do provide accurate information in a way that is fun and informative.
You know, she brings up a good point. So first of all, you know, anytime you make a blanket statement like that, you're going to be wrong. And so she obviously is up to date. Yeah, every 5 years, 75 hours, you know, that's not really going to keep you up to date. What keeps you up to date is doing stuff on a regular basis. And a lot of dietitians do. But the devil is in the details. So a number of dietitians, certainly years ago, were looking at the American Heart Association cardboard diet, you know, no fat at all. Now, we're talking about years ago, you know, where the American Heart Association said, ooh, fat, voodoo, no fat at all. And then over time, they've come to really embrace a Mediterranean diet and the idea that there are good fats and bad fats. And the other idea was we used to recommend margarine, not butter. Remember, I would say that all the time, made with margarine, not butter. And it turns out margarine had trans fats, so we switched to the fact that we don't say that anymore. And I use butter all the time on my bread. I don't use a lot of butter. I use less butter. So the fact is, fats can be part of a healthy diet, and good dietitians keep up with that information, and she is right. So she was right to correct me, and I applaud her for doing it.
That's for the two of you, that applause.
Thank you.
Do you disagree with a good doc? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page, or you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org, or just send an email directly to Tom, or I'll give you his home address and send him a postcard with exactly what you want to say.
More of your calls coming up. We'll be happy to get back to the phones. We'll be putting together a mouth-watering tofu recipe.
Tofu.
Zorba will be answering more listener emails, all coming up here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But before our next caller, Zorba, sesame tofu with broccoli.
Oh, delicious. I know whenever you hear the word tofu, your mouth just waters, right? It's just like, wow, I just can't wait to have tofu.
Mm-hmm.
You're not commenting. I mean, tofu Tom. I mean, that's what it is.
Okay.
You're still not commenting. That's it.
Are we done with this yet?
We're done with the recipe yet. Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting. Tofu really has, you think about it, it doesn't have much taste, right? I mean, it's kind of tasteless. I mean, I think of it as tasteless. I know there are tofu lovers out there that think it has umami. It's got a fullness, but I find it tasteless. And then it's got a texture of sort of jello that falls apart. So why would anyone eat tofu? Well, the answer is it absorbs some flavors, and if you have extra firm tofu, it actually doesn't fall apart nearly as much. And I make some wonderful tofu dishes because there's stuff in there that actually makes the tofu taste like something. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those recipes.
Sesame tofu with broccoli.
That's right. Now, do you like broccoli, don't
sure.
you? Yeah,
sure.
Broccoli. Yeah, broccoli I really like. When I get Chinese food at our local Chinese restaurant, I always ask for extra broccoli. I just like broccoli. Did your mother serve you broccoli as a kid?
No.
Never. Neither did mine. Mm. We never had broccoli or cauliflower.
No.
You know, we
right.
had corn, canned corn, and canned
beans.
It was like four vegetables, and the rest were like shocking. And lima beans. Anyway, no lima beans here. Sesame tofu with broccoli. Start mm-hmm. out with a 14-ounce package. You've got to get extra firm tofu.
A 14-ounce package, extra firm tofu.
Now, I want to talk for a second about tofu. You can buy tofu. Tofu you usually buy in the refrigerated part of the grocery store. But you can actually get tofu in packages that have a shelf life that are not refrigerated. And they're called ultra-pasteurized, where it's actually there so you can always have tofu in your house. And if you go to a typical Asian grocery store like I do, you can get extra firm tofu and keep it there in case you want to make this recipe and you haven't gone to the grocery store. Mm. You can have this as a stock item. So, mm-hmm. 1 14-ounce package of extra firm tofu. 3/4 cup sesame seeds.
3/4 cup sesame seeds.
Either the blonde or the black sesame seeds. Either one will work. You're going to use a teaspoon of sea salt or kosher salt.
Little tea, sea salt.
1/4 cup of sesame oil.
1/4 cup sesame oil.
Now, sesame oil goes, not exactly rancid, but doesn't taste very good once it's opened if it's out too much. So do not buy a large container of sesame oil. If you're going to stock it on your pantry, get small containers of sesame oil so they're fresh. It should be fresh sesame oil. Mm. It doesn't taste so good. 2 1/2 cups of broccoli.
2 1/2 cups broccoli.
1/2 cup of onion, yellow onion, whatever you want, finely chopped.
1/2 cup yellow onion, finely chopped.
1 cup of carrots, finely chopped.
Finely chopped.
4 cloves of garlic minced.
4 cloves garlic minced.
1/3 cup of vegetable broth.
1/3 cup vegetable broth.
Are you getting tired of these yet? I mean, you're writing this all down, right, Tom? 1/4 cup of soy sauce or tamari soy sauce.
1/4 cup tamari or soy sauce.
3 tablespoonfuls of sugar. If you have coconut sugar, that's the best to use.
3 big tea coconut sugar.
That's right. 1/4 cup of sesame oil.
1/4 cup sesame oil.
1/4 teaspoon of white pepper.
1/4 little tea white pepper.
There are a lot of ingredients.
Yeah, there sure are.
1/4 teaspoon of red pepper flakes.
1/4 little tea red pepper flakes.
1/4 teaspoon of black pepper.
1/4 little tea black pepper.
And sliced scallions for serving.
Sliced scallions for serving.
You're just laughing because there's so many things to put in here.
I'm just happy that we're done with
we're
these.
Done with it, that's right. So after you spent about a half an hour getting all the stuff together,
right.
It's really easy to do. Okay, so drain the tofu, let it rest on a towel, maybe a paper towel for a few minutes, just so that the moisture drains out of it. Lightly press it. You want to remove all the liquid as possible. And if you're using the ultra-pasteurized tofu in these little boxes, you actually don't have to do anything because there's hardly any liquid in there at all. Cut the tofu into 1-inch cubes. Now, in a small bowl, combine the sesame seeds, 1/2 teaspoon of salt. Toss it so the tofu cubes are tossed with the sesame seeds and oil. Then, heat 2 tablespoonfuls of oil in a large skillet over medium heat. Add the tofu, sear it on each side until golden brown, about 3 minutes. Remove the tofu, put on a paper towel lined plate. Then, over medium heat, in the same pan, sauté the onions and carrots until tender. Add the broccoli for about a minute or so till you begin to smell it. Then add the garlic for another minute. It's important to add the garlic afterwards so the garlic just has a minute or two of actual heat in there. Then add the vegetable broth, the seasonings. Cook it until the broccoli is tender, about 5 minutes. Remove the veggie mixture from the skillet. Set it aside in a bowl. Then, in that same skillet, add 2 tablespoonfuls of oil, tamari, which is the soy sauce, coconut sugar. Stir it until the sauce reduces and becomes syrupy. Return the broccoli mixture. Return the tofu to the skillet. Mix everything together for 5 to 7 minutes until it's at its desired tenderness. And then garnish with sesame seeds, scallions, and if you want to, some cashews and peanuts, and serve it over rice. Now, isn't that an easy recipe, Tom?
Oh, are we done with that?
I'm done with the recipe. This If you like broccoli, if you like tofu, and if you're interested in doing a recipe that takes a little more work, this really is a good recipe. And you can get this at our website, ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org, or through Facebook.
Can we get back to the phones now? 800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Monona, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, my mom has had swollen eyes for about a year now.
Huh.
The doctor can't seem to help her, and she's went to an allergist and an eye doctor last two times, and they kind of seem to blow her off.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets worse after she mows the lawn, and so we kind of seem to think it's allergies.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And the allergist blew her off last time and said, well, it's not allergies because you have it all year round. And I'm like, well, you can have allergies all year round.
Sure, of course. So, of course you can. Has she tried different eye drops at all?
They gave her some gooey kind of stuff one time to put in her eyes. That didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that's the only thing that they've given her.
So when does it bother her the most?
After she mows the lawn.
Okay. Well, you don't mow in the wintertime, so in Wisconsin,
right,
that's for sure. But it bothers her during the wintertime also?
Yeah, she's definitely puffed up during the wintertime, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I actually have a simple suggestion, a suggestion of two things. First of all, what you want to do is go on the web, or go to Walgreens or Walmart or somewhere else, and get her a mask, microwavable mask. These are masks you put in the microwave for 30 seconds, and they warm things up. So instead of a warm, moist compress, use a microwave mask. Get eye drops. Don't get initially antihistamine eye drops. Just get eye drops that are lubricating and refresh, R-E-F-R-E-S-H, are really the best on the market. You can get a generic there, which are cheaper than the name brand, but I would initially start with the name brand. And what I would recommend is one drop or two drops in each eye and 5 minutes of a warm compress, and do that twice a day, and that can reduce swelling dramatically. Just moisturizing the eye, forgetting about dealing with the allergy initially, moisturizing the eye and improving the circulation to the eye can make a huge difference. So refresh eye drops in the eye, 30 to 45 seconds in the microwave to warm up this compress. You can buy them online. They're great. Don't use anything from the sink. It doesn't, you know, with warm water, it doesn't last long enough. For 5 minutes, that's what I would recommend. Then, if that doesn't work, add an antihistamine eye drop that you can get over the counter. There are a number of good ones. Pataday is a nut one, P-A-T-A-D-A-Y. It's a great antihistamine eye drop. And she could put that in a drop, one drop of moisturizing eye drop, one drop of antihistamine eye drop, and then the warm compress. But I'd initially just do it without the allergy eye drop. And that is a really good chance of working. You got to have heat in the eye in order to reduce the swelling.
Wow, that sounds like the most information that she's gotten in a year.
Well, thank you. Have her try it and let us know what happens. Really, you'd be surprised what these microwavable eye masks do. And they cost about maybe 10 bucks, 10, 12 bucks, something like that. Not too much.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay. You take care. Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it.
We appreciate that call at 800-462-7413. Zorba, now we have a voicemail from Madison, Wisconsin.
I wonder about non-sugary drinks. My kidney doctor advised citric acid drinks. How is that? Is that good for me or bad for me? And the other question is sugar-free A&W root beer. It contains aspartame. Is aspartame safe? I probably have 6 bottles within a week and a half, 6 12-ounce bottles of A&W root beer. I just love the stuff. So, healthy or not? Thank you, Zorba.
I happen to love A&W root beer, too, actually. And actually, now that he brings up A&W, I've been debating whether or not to buy, you know, the glass. Well, did you ever get to A&W root beer as a kid?
No.
Oh, they would have it. And they would come in these frosted glass mugs. Carl, did you ever get that?
course. I love A&W root beer.
A&W with the frosted glass mug?
Got to be in a frosty mug.
You know, and I thought to myself, I should just buy that on the net and get frosted glass mugs. Do you have any at home at your house?
Sure, yeah. We got a couple mugs. Keep them in the freezer.
Really? Oh, you do that. So you're a big fan of frosted glass
mugs.
But
mostly for beer.
Oh, it's for beer. Well, it's not the same. It's got to be for A&W, but I really love it with a frosted glass mug. Anyway, I'll answer that first. Aspartame, which is NutraSweet, are two amino acids. They taste sweet. Most studied sugar substitute on the planet. You know, unless you have phenylketonuria, yes, you can take it. And he has six cans every week or two. It's really, or bottles, not an issue. Not an issue at all. Now, as for the citric acid drink, that's often given by urologists to prevent kidney stones. And it's to acidify the urine and prevent kidney stones. So I don't know exactly what our listener had, but if the urologist recommended citric acid drinks, it's often because he went to the urologist and he had problems. And usually it's a kidney stone problem. So yes, citric acid drinks can be quite useful. Body acidifies the urine, and that's actually what it's used for.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. Now, Zorba, as you know, we get so many questions from our wonderful listeners, but we also get calls from listeners who just want to share a comment or a health tip. So it's time again for that segment we call Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments, people calling us with their health tips.
Okay, Zorba, first up, let's hear from a listener in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
I just wanted to add something about getting more fruits and vegetables in. I subscribe to a fruit and vegetable service, it's Produce, and every week for $30, I get a 2-foot by 2-foot box of all kinds of fruits and vegetables. They have a different variety every week, and it's just made it easier to get the vegetables right to your house, and the challenge is to finish it off before the next box gets there. Thank you.
What a great idea. And I've read about this, and I've actually thought about it. The idea is here. You get a box of fruits and vegetables. They're seasonal during the times that you can get seasonal fruits and veggies. And it's a great idea because all of a sudden you got to do something with fruits and vegetables because you don't want to put it to waste because you paid $30 for it. And so it's a good way to eat more fruits and veggies because you get them to the house. Great idea, and thanks for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. And now, Zorba, let's hear from a Jacksonville, Florida listener.
Hey, Zorba. I just wanted to call and say I think y'all show needs to be longer than an hour. I enjoy listening to it, and I just don't think an hour a week is enough. Thank you.
That's a wonderful comment. More than an hour a week. That is great. We love our callers from Jacksonville. Absolutely love them. So thank you for your great comments.
Do we really want to do this more than an hour a week?
No, we'll do it for 5 hours a week. That's exactly it.
The callers would have different opinions.
I think that is the case.
Well, now before the break, Zorba, let's do the segment where an honest-to-Pete doctor, that's you, takes on the almighty Internet.
Ooh.
This is Google Doc. The following email came to us from a listener named Scott, who writes, Dr. Zorba, you had a caller on who was concerned about potential carcinogens in microwave popcorn, and you kind of missed the point. You advised the caller to look at the label and read the ingredients. Well, this is good. What you failed to consider is the packaging material that the popcorn is cooked in.
Oh,
if you do a Google search, you'll see that some of the lining material is carcinogenic. This is similar to cooking in a Teflon cooking pot. It's not the food that you have to worry about. It's the lining of the cookware that is dangerous and cancer-causing. Please inform your listeners of this danger with most microwave popcorn.
Well, I don't know if it's really dangerous and cancer-forming. I mean, when you look at Teflon and others, people have been saying for years Teflon causes cancer, and there's no credible evidence that it does. But I always tell people if you don't want to cook with Teflon, just don't cook with Teflon. I mean, use things like I do and use cast iron. Now, whether or not you know, these bags of microwave popcorn have been around forever now. They've been around at least 2 decades, probably like 3 decades. And we're not seeing a bump in cancer from the packaging. So I don't know if the packaging really is cancer-forming. On the other hand, it's if you don't want to use a microwave popcorn, just get a regular popcorn maker. It's so easy. And you put the popcorn in the popcorn maker with some oil and make some regular popcorn. You stay away from all the packaging. And I think what's nice is that we have two things people can do. They use the microwave popcorn in the bag for convenience. They don't feel like doing very much at all. Put the bag in, pop it up, get your popcorn. And if you want to take a little extra step, I mean, making popcorn is not complex, but you got to clean the container. Do it the natural way. Your choice. But I don't think there's really credible evidence that the packaging causes cancer. It is packaging. It is artificial. And that is true.
I must not like popcorn much. I haven't had popcorn in forever.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Penny loves popcorn. Mm. She makes popcorn all the time. She doesn't like popcorn, does she?
I guess not that much.
Well, if you haven't had it forever, yeah. You haven't. I kind of like popcorn, and you don't like it, so that's the way it goes.
Well, I could take it or leave it, I guess. I have a healthy living question for Zorba. He's always happy to offer up a kernel of truth.
And pop for an answer.
Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, another thought-provoking topic to talk about, and more listener emails as well. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our number. But Zorba, before our next call, a paradigm shift in treatment of type 2 diabetes?
Yeah, type 2 diabetes. So type 2 diabetes is not what used to be called juvenile diabetes, which was insulin-dependent diabetes, often occurring earlier on in life. Type 2 is a much more common cause of diabetes, and it has been increasing dramatically over the last 10 years. Well, last 20 years, actually. 10% of the population, believe it or not, is now diagnosed with diabetes, with million to 2 million every single year coming on board. And it's related, for the most part, to two things, obesity and lack of exercise. I mean, that's usually what it is. As we have become heavier and heavier as a society, we have developed, more diabetes. And for years, back in the 60s, research showed getting that blood sugar under control will prevent complications. Well, guess what? It may be that we're going down the wrong tree, and what we should be talking about is getting rid of the obesity, which, of course, is tough. I mean, look, earlier today we were discussing stuff about diet. Now, you've never had trouble with your weight, have you?
I've never weighed as much as I would like to weigh, yeah.
You've never weighed. You're in the opposite thing. You'd like to weigh more than you weigh. But, I mean, you're in 5% of the population, which really often says, I'd like to weigh more than I want to, but for the most part, people want to weigh less than they want to. And this particular study looked at a variety of things, looking at diabetes, whether or not weight should be the primary issue, and whether or not we should really head on to that. But the problem is we don't have a simple way to do it. And I read an article a couple of years ago in the New England Journal of Medicine that there's nothing that assures weight loss with people. And so it becomes very problematic. Do we do surgery on people in order to lose weight. It's not a very simple thing. But anyway, this looked at a variety of data that shows that although blood sugar is important, weight loss of 5 or 10% of your body weight may also be even more important. And you can just see it. You know, you go out to restaurants, don't you?
Sure.
Well, have you looked at how much they serve you when you go out to a restaurant? Don't they serve a lot of food?
Oh, sure, yeah.
I mean, you look at it, and it turns out we've adapted ourselves that we should eat larger and larger amounts of food. I can still remember when my daughter-in-law, Louisa, came into the country, went out to an Italian restaurant in Chicago when she got off the airplane, and our son Zach got his food, and she said, "Is that for both of us?" I said, "No, not at all. It's for one." But I think the real issue is we, when we treat diabetes as doctors, have to look more towards weight loss. Blood sugar is important, but weight loss is even more important, and that is going to become more important as we get heavier and heavier in our society.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, how can we help?
I was just calling. I've kind of got a unusual, kind of complex situation that happened, I guess, about 4 years ago. I was exposed to some toxins from a supplement I bought at GNC one day, and I was supposed to take it by mouth, and I kind of made a mistake and put drops of it in my eyes and ears, and it had like 10 or 12 different heavy metals in it, and I didn't know that, or I wouldn't have put it in my eyes and ears. And ever since, I've had this like warm burning feeling in my face, my ears, back of my eyes from that. And I've been to about 10 or 12 different doctors here, and an eye specialist and ear specialist. And they can't figure it out, whether the stuff is still there causing a problem or if it's gone and there's like nerve pain chronically going on.
Huh. You really are suffering. So these are drops that you were supposed to put into water and you ended up putting them into your eyes and ears?
Yeah, I made a mistake. Mm-hmm. I thought it would help with some ringing in my ears that I had and then some eye damage from a detached retina I had years ago, and I didn't look at the ingredients, and there's like 20 different types of minerals in there. Some of them you can't even pronounce, and then there's like about 12 different heavy metals in there, and I'm still feeling chronically sick here 4 years later. And I've been to the hospital, ERs multiple times, and they keep looking at me and discharging me and saying, "This isn't the place for this. You need to follow up with your primary care doctor."
So have you gone to an allergist at all for this?
I tried to call one at the UW of, I think about 6 months ago, and they said they couldn't help with this either. So I kind of feels like I'm falling through the cracks of the healthcare system.
I think you're definitely falling, through the cracks. And the real issue is, what can they do about it? And it sounds to me like you've had an allergic. Well, you certainly have had a toxic reaction to whatever you put in your ears and your eyes. And so the question then is, what can we do about it? Well, we have a few things we can do. There's steroid eye drops. There's steroid pills. Have you been on steroids at all through this?
And I think I went to the eye doctor, and they put me on steroid drops for about a week, and then they said to take artificial tear drops, and I've been using those like once or twice a day, and it helps to keep my eyes kind of moisturized, but it still doesn't affect the kind of warm burning feeling I'm still getting, like in the back of my eyes, and it feels like my vision is kind of being damaged a little bit by this because of the kind of chronic stress I'm under from this.
I've got a couple of thoughts here. So first of all, you went and saw an eye doctor at one point. They gave you steroid eye drops. I would go back. I'd get a full eye examination, and I would see whether or not a course of oral steroids and steroid eye drops in the eyes and in the ears, because that's where they both would make a difference. There's a medication, cortisone otic suspension, which can be actually has steroid ear drops, which we often use for otitis externa. That's swimmer's ear. That can make a difference. That can really help. But I would think to look towards steroids to get this inflammation to settle down. That's what I would look at, either from your eye doctor, your primary care doctor, go through a course of that. If that fails, I would go to an allergist. I'd make an appointment with an allergist, either at the University of Wisconsin, somewhere else, and say, hey, there's something going on here. Is there anything you can figure out? And that's what you've got to look at. The problem is there's some things that do fall between the cracks medically that we don't have an answer to. And the issue is leave no stone unturned. And that, I would think, would look towards somebody who's interested in inflammation. And that's where an allergist really fits into the scheme. So even though they may have said over the phone, it's nothing we can help you with, make an appointment, try the steroid eye drops and ear drops and see if that makes a difference.
Do I need to see like a medical toxicologist about this?
I would start with an allergist. That's what I would do. There are toxicologists at the university. You could go with them, but I think I would start with the allergy department first.
I appreciate that. Thanks, Doctor.
You're welcome. Thanks for your call.
We appreciate that call at 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, let's crack open the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and take a listener email. The following question came to us from an anonymous listener. Dear Dr. Zorba, I just wanted to say that I listen every week and I always had an image in my head of two cartoon characters. One is a walrus, your sidekick, Tom, and you, a chipmunk.
Chipmunk and a walrus.
Sorry for that.
Walking down the street. Walrus and chipmunk.
Sorry for that. I see your photos, and I am way off. You look like you could be a country singer with a low bass voice. Oh, well, I might as well ask a health question. So why do I sneeze after eating several times in a row? I looked it up and thought, gustatory rhinitis, or something like that. It only happens after I eat, like clockwork, 10 sneezes. Thank you for your time, and I am waiting for the Zorba cartoon Sunday.
I don't think that's going to happen. But yes, it's gustatory. People can sweat after they eat. They sneeze after they eat. They cough after they eat. They can turn red-faced after they eat. It's sort of an allergic reaction. And sometimes you can do things about it. You can take antihistamines. But who wants to take an antihistamine every day if you don't need it? So most people end up living with it, and they just make sure that they have a place to sneeze. They're not driving their car right after they eat, because when you sneeze, you close your eyes. So good luck.
I have a healthy living question for Zorba. He's happy to fire the answer right back at you. Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime with your question for Dr. Zorba. Let's now hear a voicemail from a listener in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Dr. Zorba, would you speak to the issue of sexual transmitted diseases among post-retirement age group, preventing? And thank you. I enjoy your show.
She brings up a good point. There's a place called The Villages, which is a huge place, huge retirement place in Florida. And you know what The Villages is known for? Having the highest prevalence of sexually transmitted disease in the country.
Okay.
Now, whether or not it's still true or not, I don't know. And the reason is, you know, there are often STDs spread among seniors. They don't have to worry about pregnancy, but they don't even think about sexually transmitted diseases. And many of them never discussed it or received education. Or if they did, they received it in high school 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They don't realize the importance. And there's a major increase in HIV infection among senior citizens. I mean, they're just not using the proper, actually, condoms and using proper techniques to make sure they don't transmit STDs. So What's the answer to this? Well, the answer to this for STDs is education, just like we did in high school, just like you may have done in college, just like other times. Seniors need to be educated for STDs. Condoms prevent sexually transmitted diseases. We know that people who are much more promiscuous are much more likely to spread sexually transmitted diseases. And I think she brings up a good point that seniors often don't even think about STDs when they engage in sex when they're older. And the answer is use protection. It's simple, folks. Whether you're young or whether you're old, it's simple because you don't want to get an STD no matter what your age is.
800-462-7413, our number. That's 1-800-462-7413. Before we head out today, Zorba, let's log into our email again and share a listener question. The following email came to us from Natalie in Buffalo, New York. Natalie writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba. Is it safe to eat tuna several times a week? Or, in other words, how much tuna would you have to eat to get mercury poisoning?"
Well, that's a good question, and it changes basically based on what the CDC looks at. You certainly can eat tuna twice a week. Now, Tom, we don't have a computer in front of us, so I would recommend going to the CDC website and looking up that exact number. But you can definitely eat tuna a couple of days a week. You know, mercury is a big issue. It's a big issue because we want to have less and less mercury, but the tuna and the way the tuna is sourced today is less likely to have mercury than it did years ago. We're more likely to have mercury in Wisconsin fish because the fish, especially in the Fox River, where there was lots and lots of paper-making equipment, was much more likely to have mercury. But I would defer to the CDC website and would follow what they had to say, certainly with that. I think a variety of fish is better than eating the same fish all the time. So eating tuna a couple of days a week and eating salmon a couple of other days might be good. But we know that eating fish is healthful, and we know the health benefits of fish definitely outweigh the possible detrimental effects that there may be for prevalence of mercury poisoning within tuna. So CDC website, that's the way to figure it out.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Stay well, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget you can call us anytime to leave your question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidrin. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.